Hello. Oh, hello. Welcome. This is Sword Explained.
This is a little Sword Explained podcast.
My name is Kellen Dougherty.
And I'm Leah Nielsen.
And today we're going to sort of explain something.
Kellen is going to be sort of explaining today.
Explain it right into your face. Except your face is many miles away.
Into my ear holes.
That sweet, sweet spleen. It's coming in.
So, it is. And yeah. I do not know. I do not know what we are in for today.
Nope. And, I mean, last week I did something very, well, not last week. Whenever my last episode was, who knows? Am I right? March? I don't know. Anyway.
What year is it? Come on.
20.
I legitimately can't think of what day it is right now. Wednesday?
Yes.
Okay.
But it could most likely, like, it was also Memorial Day weekend, so that's thrown everybody off.
Yeah, true.
Today feels like a Tuesday.
Sure.
Friday will come at some time.
I would have picked either Wednesday or Friday. I thought today might have been a Friday.
Really?
I've lost all sense of time.
You just woke up with those sweet Friday vibes.
Yeah, I was jamming all day, gardening, and yeah, that's about it. That's all I did.
And I was angrily muttering at my work computer for 8 hours. So we're both doing great. Everyone's great.
So great. So what are you going to be telling me about today?
Well, it only made sense since my last episode, I did something very prevalent and pressing, the issue of redlining.
Yes.
So it only made sense that today I cover something heavily relevant still today as well. So here we go. The year is 1845.
Okay. So current, so hot right now.
I know. Oof. Gonna get a little spicy here. I know all you 1846 babies won't be able to relate, but me in my older years, I remember it like it was yesterday. So 1845, picture this. Leah, you're still who you are, a 28-year-old white woman, but the year is 1845, so for your age, you're like middle-aged and you have
married for sure.
Yeah. And, like, you and your husband, let's name him, like, Sean or Connor, whatever you want. Yeah, Scott works. I'll give you some liberties with it, sure. But okay. He just has to have an Irish name because you're living in Ireland in a small Irish village.
Okay.
Yeah. So, cut to a little in the future. Everyone's dying. You, your family, your neighbors, everybody.
Oh, I wonder why.
That's right. Strap in, because it's the Irish potato famine.
Yes, yes. And I have exciting. That is great, and I have a bit of a offensive joke I can put in at the end. So remind me.
Just sprinkle it in.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, I appreciate the enthusiasm. That's really what I need to feed my ego for this now harrowing tale I'm going to tell. Now, to most of the world, we call it the Irish potato famine, but to Ireland, it's mostly just the Great Famine or the Great Hunger. Mm-hmm. They're like, why would we call it the Irish potato famine? We're here.
It does.
Anyway, and I obviously knew the famine was like a big thing in history, but I never really learned about it because in my high school history classes, we only talked about American history, and we just kind of briefly talked about it, like, oh, yeah, and then, like, they didn't have potatoes, so all the Irish died, and I was like, is that a stereotype? Like, just because there's no potatoes, everyone will die? But it was no, that was actually the thing that happened. But I didn't really know any of the real details or the magnitude of it all or anything. So
me neither. Was not taught this.
Yeah. So turns out, yeah, it was a big deal. And it all starts with looking at Ireland's very tumultuous relationship with the United Kingdom.
Mm.
So in 1801, there was this thing called the Acts of Union, which basically merged Ireland into part of the United Kingdom. Now, to the British, they should have been like, great, we love having the power over others. That's why we're a kingdom,
right? Love this. It's like their favorite thing, I'm pretty sure.
It's literally their number one hobby on their Tinder profile. It's like, we like to colonize.
Colonization.
Sundays. So, they should have been like, great, another one in the bag. Let's do it. But apparently they weren't like super jazzed about it because they looked really down on Ireland. They were like, oh God, they're all far away on this little island. They're all poor. Maybe they were afraid of gingers. I don't know. but they definitely were like the elites, and Ireland was like their like gross cousin.
Yeah.
And the state that Ireland was in basically, quote, prophesized disaster. So Ireland was on the verge of starvation, population rapidly increasing, three-quarters of laborers unemployed, housing conditions appalling, and the standard of living unbelievably low.
Ooh, okay. Already bad.
Yeah. So already not starting off great. When you are at the base level of that, it only gets worse. And a big reason for this huge surge of poverty in Ireland was because they had this thing called the middleman system, which was introduced in the 18th century. So what the middleman system was it was in terms of like tenants and rent. So there's your landlord, guy at the top. And then there's the guy that actually collects the rent, who is called the landlord's agent or the middleman. And this was great for the landlord because they were like, great, I don't actually have to see these poor gingers. Like, I just get to keep doing my thing and I just get regular rent payments every month. It all works out.
Yeah.
And all the responsibility was then put on the middleman, who were under like extreme pressure to, you know, get the rent from the tenants. And
but I'm sure they were like tough, right?
Tough,
like loan sharks, you know, like, the middleman's gonna get your rent. I feel like that would be the kind of person that would be like, yeah, I'll take this job.
Yeah, so they were definitely there to exploit the tenants. So these middlemen, they worked for the very wealthy people who owned this property in Ireland, which back in then, if anybody owned land, you were very well off.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't actually live in Ireland. They lived in England. They just owned property in Ireland. So they didn't even see what was going on. They were just like living in their abodes, so you'll say.
Okay.
A lot of them were earls, which is a title I don't really understand to be an earl. It's just like an aristocrat with money.
All I know of earls is that the Earl of Sandwich was the dude who like created the sandwich.
Was that actually true?
That is totally true.
I didn't know if that was like a joke someone told me once or if that was folklore or where that came from.
No, it was just a rich earl who was like, no, I want meat in my bread, like in between it.
Oh, this is great with meat in between. What if I also put a pickle in here?
What if I make a lightly roasted panini? Like, no, that's probably not what I had.
And then George Foreman came in and was like, I've got just the thing.
Revolution. And that is historically accurate.
Yes. He definitely lived in Ireland. So these middlemen, they were described, just like you said, as land sharks or bloodsuckers. Mm-hmm. And the, quote, most oppressive species of tyrant that ever lent assistance to the destruction of a country.
Great.
Like, they're not doing well in the history books. They were like,
no.
You guys, ugh. And then I put, but why? Loan sharks are thought of as such nice people, so wouldn't a land shark be nice too? Plus, sharks are not really that scary on land. But
good one.
Some of the bad things that they would do, a lot of bad things, but they would mostly get these like large tracts of land from the landlord, and they would create a very long lease with very fixed rates. How long the lease was, I don't know. It just said very long, so take that as it will in the 18th century. Or the 1800s. But they would then split a holding into smaller and smaller sections so they could get more people crammed in to get more rent payments.
Oof.
So yeah. It's kind of like New York City during this time period as well, with like tenement housing.
Yes.
Like yeah. 50 people crammed in a building where maybe there should really only be like 30. And oh, here's a 2-bedroom apartment. We can probably divvy it up. Perfect. Put 4 families in here.
Yeah.
There you go. We got 4 rent payments a month. So perfect.
God.
Yeah. And considering if you improved your home living quarters at all, like your little cabin, when you moved out, that property would become the landlord's, since they didn't really like their landlords, since they were exploited. They didn't really have any incentive to like fix up their homes at all. And landlords could also evict someone like really anytime they wanted to. So a family is a day late on their rent, you're out.
Done.
Okay, so we don't want this land to grow crops anymore because you are farming potatoes. Well, guess what? It's cheaper to bulldoze your house, and then we're going to bring in sheep and just have livestock instead. Perfect. You're huh. out. Like, leave. Like, today. Like, now. Put your yeah. belongings so in a little bandana and go.
Yeah, like, there's no laws. There's no, like, rights. You're just
not
like,
really. No.
Out. Okay.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, this huge power dynamic with, yeah, the people at the bottom really have no say. And they, even if I think they tried to do anything, you know, the rich people would just be like, they're lying. And then yeah. that's it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I mean, today, especially during a pandemic when people can't make their rent and you're seeing some landlords not giving a flying fook and still demanding rent with the unemployment skyrocketing. Yeah. Like, imagine what a landlord would do to exploit people in 1845.
Yeah, they just wouldn't care at all.
Yeah. Bad news bears on that. So, yeah. Now, according to the 1841 Irish census, there were about 8 million people in Ireland. 2/3 of those 8 million depended on agriculture for survival. And the main way it worked was they would work for the landlord in return for the patch of land they needed to grow enough food to just basically feed their families. So yeah, they're really okay. just growing food to have enough to not starve. And yeah. then they're using the rest of the money to sell the potatoes and then use that to pay their rent. And that's like it.
Okay.
Which is, of course, just an eloquent way to describe poverty in any sense, I suppose. You're just doing what you can to not, you know, die, basically.
Just survive, yeah.
And since that was really the only revenue Ireland was making, not having land to grow your crops was a life or death situation much of the time. So getting evicted really felt like a death sentence a lot, especially if you had, you know, a full family, young children. So
yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about something called the potato dependency. Or what okay. I like to call my diet.
Yeah. I'm like, I could relate to that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I could talk all day about how I would be totally happy just eating a baked potato for dinner probably every night until I'm dead. Like, I mean, that's fine.
Also just, like, such variety. Like, baked potatoes, french fries, mm-hmm. you know, like, the scalloped potatoes.
Ooh, scalloped potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Scalloped potatoes are great, yeah.
I haven't had a long time.
Gnocchi, I mean, there's so many options.
That's, so much.
If you were on a desert island, I would totally bring a potato, like, that without even question.
Yeah, ooh, I think that would be a good
choice. You would get sick of pizza. You wouldn't get sick of a potato.
Well, Ireland is an island. So,
like, that is true. And if you had nothing on there but barren land and one and a few potatoes, yeah, that'd be fine.
I mean, yeah.
So yeah, that was not their potato dependency. Theirs was more economic, I suppose. Although sometimes mine feels economic because I don't want to spend money. I can buy a potato for $1. But anyway, prior to the 1820s, the potato was thought more of as just like a supplement to a diet, and it was also used a lot as just fodder to feed livestock. So it wasn't like your full meal or anything. But potatoes were easy to grow, they were filling, they were cheap, so they soon became a staple diet to the poor, especially in the winter. Because you could grow a full crop of potatoes, and then in those chilly Irish winters, you know, you got your potato closet or cabinet under the bed. I don't know where you would keep them, but you would have your potato stash, and that could feed your family for the winter. So
yeah,
it was like very, very popular for that reason. And since potatoes were cheap, that led to a very cheap workforce. So you weren't getting paid a lot to grow your potatoes. So I think if, you know, these were avocado farms, well, then maybe things would have been different. But since they were just potatoes, that's kind of how things turned out.
Imagine if Ireland could grow avocados. They would have an entirely different history of the whole country.
Yeah. It might, I don't know if it would be better or worse. I could see it, like, turning into mayhem.
I think, aren't avocados now kind of turning into mayhem?
Yes.
Like, I feel like there might be, like, a little bit of a shortage or something.
Yeah, well, I think that was because we were having not great relations south of the border.
Oh, trade.
And he was like, oh, Mexico, we're not trading with you. And they were like, fine, see how long you last without avocados. And we lasted, like, a day.
Yeah.
And all the white women were like, what?
I cannot picture Trump eating an avocado in his life.
He probably doesn't know what an avocado is.
Probably doesn't, so he probably doesn't care. If it's not fried
in batter, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's like, does that come on the Big Mac, or is that extra? So there was no genetic variability when it came to these potatoes. It was just the one strain. So when a disease comes in, it wipes out all the crops because there's no variation.
Yes.
And this is exactly what happened. Phytophthora infestans,
are
more commonly referred to as blight, attack crops.
Okay.
And there were two kinds of this kind of blight. It was called dry rot and taint.
What? Taint?
Taint.
Okay.
You know. You get me.
I guess.
Your potato taint, right?
Of course. Of course.
So, in 1844, Irish headlines started reporting of how a blight had destroyed a large amount of potato crops in the U.S. And it's thought that some of these blighted crops were shipped from, like, Baltimore, Philly, New York City. They were shipped into Europe, and that's how it spread.
Okay.
But that's just a theory, because they don't know, because, again, it was the 1800s, but that's what they thought.
That is a common disease theory. You know, typically something comes from somewhere else, and then spreads everywhere.
And then here we are in a pandemic.
Here we are in one of those lovely disease spread times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I actually just put the, it's a coronavirus of crops. COVID to humans is blight to potatoes.
Okay.
Rapidly infectious and spreads very quickly. And
but is it a fungus or like a virus disease? You know?
They just said disease.
Okay, okay.
And I don't know enough about plants.
Okay. Okay, so I mean, it was sort of, I get it.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just a thing, and it was bad. And then, so a lot of countries like France, Belgium, and the Netherlands were reporting their crop failures after that, and that it was a cause for alarm. And even the papers in Ireland was like, you should probably be scared. We should probably look out for this. But England, quote, remained optimistic. You know, like how COVID will just go away with a miracle.
Wow, yeah. Just pry it away. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Just do the hush-hush, sweep it under the rug. Everything's fine. As you can see, there's no problems because the sky is blue and there's still water in the ocean. So how can anything be wrong?
Yep.
So it wasn't until the harvest season of 1845 when the Irish farmers saw the complete destruction of this blight. So They're like, okay, ready to eat our potatoes all for the winter. Here we go. And then they were like, oh, shit, we have no food. We're all going to die. Because the potatoes were super gross looking. And I was looking up pictures of it. I mean, it just looks rotten. You know, they're like black and green. And apparently inside the potato, a lot of the time, sometimes they could also look normal on the outside. But they cut it open. Inside the potato was slimy rot, and the smell alone could make someone vomit.
Oh, wow. That's real atrocious.
Yeah. I, like, picture it of just, like, a dead body. Like, that would make me vomit.
Yeah, you, like, open a potato and it just oozes out.
Out of that, like, thin potato skin in the first place. And you expect it to be hard, and then nope, it's not fluffy and warm on the inside, it's slime. And apparently, I mean, they were like, well, we're gonna starve, so people tried to still eat them, but that would cause, quote, intestinal agony.
So, okay, so it was, like, actually sickening to people. Mm-hmm. That could bear to eat it.
Yeah, like, I think they tried, I don't know if they were, like, slurping it down, putting it in a glass and trying to drink it, but a few people tried to eat it, and it did not go well. So.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this, of course, was communicated to their overlords, England, and the English Prime Minister at the time was a Sir Robert Peel. And he wrote that these Irish reports were alarming, but there's, quote, always a tendency to exaggeration in Irish news.
Okay, that's a little much. But also, like, kind of funny that his name was Peel. It's a pun, potato peel.
I never put that together. That's really funny.
Yeah.
I had to peel you, mister.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, in 1845, one third of acreage was lost to blight. And in 1846, three quarters of the harvest were lost.
Whoa.
So when your country has a potato dependency and then three fourths of your potatoes are compromised, it's going to cause a lot of people to starve to death or die from diseases caused from malnutrition.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, during these troubling years, what do you think the British were doing to help? The answer is not
very much.
Now, the party in control in Britain at the time were the Tories, and Prime Minister, this man, Sir Robert Peel, he at least was like, at least doing something. It just, none of it was working. So first, he purchased 100,000 pounds worth of maize and cornmeal from America. However, due to poor weather conditions, the shipment took 4 months to get to Ireland. Now, I don't know how long it should have taken. I know it would have taken a long time because it's the 1800s and it's a boat.
Yeah.
But apparently, that's way too long. So, that's like... Yeah. I think that's more like Roanoke time period. Remember when it was like, oh, I'll go back to England and get us supplies. And then it took him like forever. And then Roanoke vanished when he got back.
I vaguely know of that story.
Maybe I'll have to explain it sometime. I'm obsessed with that story.
You like, may have to.
So, but yeah, so this took 4 months. And by the time it gets there, they're like, great, food. But they couldn't do anything with it because the maize, first and foremost, the maize, they couldn't do anything because the Irish didn't have the correct kind of mills to mill the maize. So they build those. And the few mills that they did have, the cost of the maize skyrocketed because it was supply and demand. Most Irish couldn't afford it. And then as for the cornmeal, before it could be consumed, it, quote, had to be very much cooked again, or eating it could result in severe bowel complaints.
Oh, okay. Another gross one.
Yellow color and initial unpopularity, it became known as Peel's Brimstone.
Ew.
So he got what came to him. They're like, oh, yeah? your help didn't work, so we're going to call this after you. How do you like that? And while just eating potatoes is enough to keep you alive, at least, a diet of just cornmeal would lead to scurvy. So they were like, we can't just eat this. We don't have enough
vitamins and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, Peel just kept trying to bring corn to Ireland among, like, public works programs and, like, these different ways, but it was just never working. So eventually, Peel was basically forced to resign, and that is when the Whigs stepped in.
Okay.
And that is also when it goes from bad to worse, because at least the Tories were, like, trying. But the Whig administration, with their laissez-faire attitudes, really did no help. So I kind of think of it as Democrat-Republicans. Like, the Democrats are trying, but they just always lose. Like, there's just not anything happening. But then the Republicans step in, and they're like, guess what? Nobody, get rid of all of this.
And we're going to make it worse.
Yeah. So they limited the amount of food aid they sent to Ireland. And there was also a rule that anyone who held even as little as a quarter of an acre of land couldn't receive food aid. So if you sold all of your produce just to make your rent and taxes, you wouldn't be eligible for food. So it was like, well, you're better off than the homeless. And it was like, yeah, but we're still going to starve because all we did was pay our rent. So,
damn. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a flawed system. And what about an estate with debt, you ask? Well, there was this thing called the Encumbered Estates Act, where estates would be auctioned off super cheaply, and the wealthy British people then would buy them and be like, ew, why are all these, like, scrawny, smelly Irish people here? Like, evict them and use the land for grazing cattle. So, the families' homes would often be burnt down to the ground or demolished to prevent the family from trying to come back and, like, squatting there.
Yeah.
And so, during this time, around 500,000 families were evicted.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so now,
mean. Why are the British so mean for so long?
For so long. They, like,
for so long.
Build any empathy. It was really, they were the school bully for, like, way too long. Like, school bullies, like, it's second grade. Okay, fine. Dude, we're about to graduate. Like, get it together. You don't need to shove the Irish into the lockers.
Like, yeah, like,
stop. God. And also, in 1782 and 1783, there was a bad famine in Ireland as well. But when that happened, all food grown in Ireland was to remain in Ireland to drop local food prices so, you know, people could live.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen in 1845. So it's estimated that about 4,000 vessels carried from Ireland to England took place. So peas, beans, onions, rabbits, salmon, oysters, herring, lard, honey, tongues, animal skins, rags, shoes, soap, glue, and seeds were all sent over to the motherland.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like there's no food in Ireland. It's just that everything besides potatoes were being exported, or the price of other food in Ireland was so high, people in poverty couldn't afford anything.
Right.
So that's why, again, they relied on the potato. So the biggest thing of all, though, was butter.
Yeah.
So the British were exporting, guess how many gallons of butter they exported?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've never thought of butter in the measurement of gallons.
Is that not how you buy it?
No, I wouldn't say it is.
You don't buy it in, like, a jug, like how you get your milk?
Like, literally just a milk jug full of butter. And you just have to scrape it out. Ew, the butter jug. No, I happen to not purchase that. In fact, I actually eat Earth Balance milk-free butter because I care.
Oh, shout out Earth Balance.
Shout out Earth Balance. Shout out to the earth. We like it.
Well, you know, Land O'Lakes, they actually got rid of the Native American imagery on their packaging.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, that was like the little bit of good news that came during when COVID was really taking a hit. Yeah. It was like, well, in other news, butter is getting more woke. And I was like, thank goodness. Thanks, Land O'Lakes. Only took you forever, but
I know, like, I don't even want to, like, give them a pat on the back. Like, it's 2020.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You should have cut that shit out in, like, the 70s.
Yeah. Also, you don't need any women on butter to sell it. Just sell it as butter. No one was like, aw, but that Native American woman, she knows butter.
Why? What are you talking about? Do you know anything about her?
Marketing is so weird.
It's
I can't do it.
Okay, so gallons of butter. I have no idea. It's in the thousands, I'm guessing.
Yes, it is 800,000 gallons of butter.
Oh my god, that's so much. That's crazy. Yeah.
And I put, why do you need so much butter, England? With a bunch of question marks and exclamation points. Like, that is absurd. I can't even fathom that much butter. I mean, of course, this is over years, but still, it just, that's a lot of butter. And I mean, if you're starving to death, I would eat a stick of butter. It wouldn't be good. It would be gross. I might throw up, but I'd try. At least you
could,
you know, fatten up.
Yeah.
Something. So.
Did I ever tell you, just a quick side story, I went to a Pennsylvania farm center and went to a butter sculpture competition. And they made, like, huge life-size sculptures out of butter.
Was that the farm museum?
No, it was, like, the farm center. It's, like, a huge stadium. And they have, like, this farm thing every year. They also had, like, a butterfly tent and, like, a cow competition and all that stuff. But there was a butter sculpture.
Wow, I did not know that.
It was very cool, honestly.
I would sculpt. I mean, I wouldn't be good at it, but I would try to sculpt butter. It would be way better than ice sculptures.
Yeah, like, it's a good medium, really.
Yeah. I was going to say, if it was the farm museum, I have been there in Baltimore, and I threw up there once. So, I know that place. Well.
So weird.
I have a lot of butter stories, but... But besides Sir Poole's exports of maize that didn't pan out, there's also a lot of wheat. So the British are like, don't say we never gave you anything. Here's a lot of wheat. Except that wheat was primarily used to feed the livestock that was living on the land of all of those evicted.
Yeah.
So, like, you can imagine your landlord knocks on your door, hey, you need to leave. I'm gonna have, like, sheep live here instead, because they're, like, way cheaper than you. You're gonna starve? That's too bad. Can you get out of the way? I gotta bring in all this food to feed my sheep. Like, bye, have fun.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
Yeah, like, they're way more concerned with feeding the livestock than the people, but hey, that's cool. Now, why, you ask, would the Irish export food to England when they themselves are starving? Well, they had to, because if they didn't send that food, they wouldn't be able to pay the rent, and since the landlord was the wealthy and the British, they were caught in this constant cycle of, okay, well, if I pay my rent, then at least I won't be homeless, and I'll have a chance, but, you know, if I don't pay my rent, and we have food, then it could have been worse. Like, who knows what the British would have done? They had all the power, so it was just like they were stuck. So, yeah. And according to the Freeman's Journal in April 1846, quote, what the devil do we care about you or your black potatoes?
Ooh!
It's so mean.
It is so mean! It's such a bully!
It was not us that made them black. You will get 2 days to pay the rent, and if you don't, you know the consequences.
Jeez. Yeah.
But again, it's still, like, very applicable today, except it wouldn't be about potatoes. It would be like, what the devil do we care that your son is sick? You will pay us in 2 days.
Exactly. You
know? It's just, it's, yeah. It is that. So people were homeless. They were sleeping in ditches, wandering around the countryside looking for work. And there was some relief. There was a lot of charitable contributions, you know, a lot of, you know, the churches are trying to do what they could. There was also a lot from the American Quakers and the native Choctaw tribe from America, which is like amazing. Like, you guys had the worst happen to you and you're still like, oh, we're gonna help these poor starving people because we're way better than everyone else. Like, good yep. Lord, you don't deserve it. But yep. I mean, the Irish did, but yeah. So they helped a lot. But you know, otherwise just lots of death all swirling around all over the place. And there was this Irish nationalist named John Mitchell, and he was this guy that is like kind of the guy in the movie, like the smart, crazy guy that like sounds the alarm bell and everyone just like brushes him off and then disaster happens and he's like, I told you so. Because in 1844, he wrote about the potato disease and how this could be serious, but he was of course ignored. And you know, when this does blow over in 1861, he wrote his book, The Last Conquest of Ireland, and spoke of how the British were purposefully trying to kill off the Irish. He states, the Almighty indeed sent the potato blight, but the English created the famine.
Now, whistleblower.
And what happens to whistleblowers?
Not a good thing.
They weren't treated great. So that's right, he was charged and convicted of treason and shipped off to Bermuda.
Oh, well, okay. I'd rather be in Bermuda than England at the time.
Right? I'm like, take me to Bermuda. I know I'm in prison, but, like, it's warm. He might have fried. He was Irish, though, so I don't know if they gave him sunscreen.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, he might have died of sun poisoning, like, 2 days ago. Like, I can't do it. This isn't the weak Irish sun that I'm used to.
I do actually have an actually Irish friend, and he, every time he's rainy, it's like, oh, it's great. Feels like home.
He's like, I feel safe going outside. I won't.
Yeah, I will not burn.
Yeah, so back to this famine, though. The Irish, many resorted to crime. The main crime, stealing food. Or some of them would just try to do any kind of crime to get caught, because at least if you were arrested, you'd be sent to jail, or you'd be fed, or up to a colony, most notably Australia, where they'd also have food.
Okay. So like,
yeah, send me to Australia, get me out of this dying, death-ridden island, like,
yeah, if it's better.
Yeah. And now, here's some fun trivia, Leah. Do you know why we eat green-colored foods on St. Patrick's Day?
I do not at all. I feel like it has something to do with the shamrock, but that might be wrong.
So it doesn't have anything to do with shamrocks. Well, it's kind of related with shamrocks, but it doesn't have anything to do with, like, the Irish rolling green hills or, like, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's because during the famine, people resorted to eating grass.
Whoa! So, like, grass.
Yeah.
That's awful.
And when in Irish folk memory, they talk of how people's mouths were green as they died.
Ooh, that's so bad.
Some fun things to think about when you're eating your shamrock shake next St. Patrick's Day.
I did try one. They are disgustingly sweet.
I have never tried one in my life.
I just wanted to try one because I've never tried one. Yeah. And it was just like, blah. It was just so...
Is it just mint chocolate?
It's like mint chocolate? But just super, super sweet. Mm. Like, if you could imagine the center of an Oreo, but minty. They do have that.
Yeah, they do.
But like, in a drink, that. A full beverage of that. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, gross. I mean, I get headaches if I drink too sugary of, like, a cocktail, so I can't imagine.
Yeah, no. This would maybe kill you.
Yeah. Or, like, yeah, if you were just, like, drinking mint icing off of a cake.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
You'd have to like start chewing it. Yeah. Anyway, what is it like to die of starvation? Well, even someone with a very bland imagination can picture it, but according to Healthline, it starts like this and it ends, well, in death. Main symptoms: faintness, dizziness, blood pressure drop, slowing heart rate, hypotension, weakness, dehydration, thyroid malfunction, abdominal pain, low potassium, body temperature fluctuation, post-traumatic stress or depression, obviously, heart attack, and organ failure.
Okay.
So basically your body just starts shutting down one phase after another.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the famine lasted from 1845 to the early 1850s. Some say like 1849, others think more like 1852. You know, it definitely started decreasing in 1849, but it wasn't like super eradicated until the 1850s. In these short years, how many people died approximately? Well, we don't really know, because some disease, you know, you just get diseases in general. But others were specifically caused from the malnutrition. So it's like hard to say for sure. But because turns out when you're extremely malnourished, you're much more susceptible to infection.
Yeah. And like homeless, if you're like homeless.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know how people these days are like, I need my green power smoothie every morning. That's why I never get sick. Well, imagine if you are starving to death and all you had were rotten potato scraps. Like, your immune system is shot. Like, anything that comes very close to you, you're getting it. And you're
not
going to do well. The main diseases the Irish were dying from during this time period were diphtheria, dysentery, measles, whooping cough, tuberculosis, smallpox, and influenza.
Oof. The classic 1800s diseases, I would say.
Yeah, all the classics. Put them on the Oregon Trail. Seems pretty similar, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And fevers were rampant. Since so many people were overcrowding soup kitchens and food depots and workhouses, that became a breeding ground for typhus, typhoid, and relapsing fever, which is transmitted through lice and tick bites.
Oof. Oof.
Yeah. So it's like social distancing, guys. And they didn't know that, obviously. And I mean, even if they did, they're starving.
They couldn't do it, yeah.
But yeah, so of course you put all these sick people together. Yeah, they're all going down. And since people were literally starving, people weren't very concerned with their hygiene and sanitation. And so homeless, so yeah, they're not too concerned if they haven't had a shower. And in addition, with the dietary changes, that caused a huge surplus of diarrheal and intestinal parasitic deaths.
Ew.
That's a bad way to go. Like,
yeah, but I feel like common. It was common then, you know.
Yeah,
like that's what cholera does.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
pooping to death.
Poop to death.
And then the worms come. That's when I'm like, oh god, nope, I'm out. I can barely do that thinking about dogs having worms when people have it. It's like, oh god. Yeah. And that, and what else was going on back in the 1830s? Well, cholera did spread through Asia, then to Europe, Britain, and lastly Ireland. So on top of the famine, cholera arrives in Ireland in 1849. So they're really catching any breaks.
Because their sanitation wasn't good. They didn't have those Toto toilets or anything.
Yeah, no bidets.
Zero bidets.
Miles and miles between a good bidet. And barely any spas.
Steam baths, any of that? Nope. House, nope, don't think so.
Yeah. So at first it was shown through the census that at least 400,720 people died from diseases, and at least 21,770 died from just straight up starvation. However, it's been acknowledged later on by census commissioners that these numbers were actually way higher. So statisticians later on estimate the death toll to be around 1 million or 20 to 25% of Ireland's total population.
Wow. Wow. Awful.
Just knocks them out.
So many people.
And it's also hard to say because so many people fled Ireland during this time. Many emigrated to England, Wales, Scotland, North America, and Australia. And let's talk about the Irish that went across the pond to the U.S. and Canada.
Oh, lovely.
Now, you can probably imagine it. People emigrating to the New World in the 1800s. It was not an easy journey, and it was estimated that oftentimes one of five people would die on the way there. So wow. It's like, I mean, yeah, these ships were called coffin ships.
Oof.
They really getting straight to the point. They're like, you want on here? Just know it's called a coffin ship. So
get ready. Right.
Avast, here we come.
Let's go.
They were horribly overcrowded, and it took just one sick passenger to get everyone infected. So yeah. Everybody is just sleeping and sneezing on top of each other, barely any food on there. And on top of all that, it's a rickety ship in the Atlantic Ocean. So, like, I just imagine the seasickness. Like,
yeah.
And you can't get above deck. Everyone's just vomiting. Ugh. Be a mess. So, yeah. I mean, 2 months ago when all those cruise ships were compromised and people on them had to be quarantined because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Imagine that deadly of an infectious disease, but everyone is in one cabin together.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
And once they were in North America, most ships went to Canada. Probably because Canada's closer. But also because it was part of the British Empire. And at first, the British liked this because they could offer super cheap passage to Canada to get people to work in the lumber yards.
Yeah.
And the 1851 census showed that more than half of Toronto's population was Irish.
Wow. So,
like, the Irish
invasion. I guess they probably still have a huge Irish population.
Yeah, that's what I found strange when I was, like, reading about it. I was like, I never think of any Irish people in Canada.
I think of more the French.
Yeah, French.
You know?
Yeah. But, yeah. Who knows? But, yeah. Yes. So, anyway. Oh, here I am. In 1847, during nationalist insurgencies, the British government started putting harsh restrictions on emigration to Canada. They were like, oh, no, all the Irish are going to be in Canada, and then they're going to get that crazy idea the colonists had in America, and before you know it,
they're going to revolt.
We don't have the power anymore. So they were, like, trying to stop that. They were like, no more. You can't go to Canada. So then the Irish continued to emigrate to the U.S., mostly landing in cities like Boston, Philly, Baltimore, and New York City.
Yeah.
And due to harsh living conditions, starvation, and evictions, between 1.5 to 2 million Irish left Ireland by 1854.
Wow.
So a ton.
That's like almost equal numbers of dying and leaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, and I always hear about, like, oh, my family came over during the famine. I always thought that was, like, exaggeration of, like, I'm sure they did. Just because, like, I'm Irish and I don't know any of my Irish history at all. But turns out, like, yeah, a lot of people came over
during the famine.
So that's very likely. And now, around 1849 to 1852, famine just kind of, like, ended. The crops began to come back, and also less people stopped dying because there were already so many people dead, and those others, so many people left. So, like, the population declined. It just eventually started to get better. So it was no, like, miracle cure or anything that, like, fixed it. And it, of course, also led to a national insurgence in Ireland. So they were so concerned about Canada, you should have been concerned about Ireland itself. And so in 1922, the Irish War of Independence had most of the Irish's or had most of Irish succeed from the UK. And many people, many Irish people, believe the famine to be an act of genocide by the British. So per the Hague Convention of 1948, quote, they concluded that the British government deliberately pursued a race and ethnicity, good Lord, based policy aimed at destroying the Irish people and that the policy of mass starvation amounted to genocide.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. And many believe that the British wanted to weed out the poor Irish families and just take over Ireland with wealthy landlords and use it as land to graze and till to provide means for the UK. They kind of just saw it as an investment, and then they were like, all these people are dying. Let's just look the other way. Well, what are we going to do? Especially since it was well known that the British looked down on the Irish, ethnically speaking. It's again like, oh, they're gross, they're ginger, they're, I don't understand their accent, whatever it was. I don't know all the things. They were prejudiced. There was just a lot. And still kind of, I mean, they're still thought of as, you know, like being an Irish person, we're very much thought of as like the weird cousin of, you know, the empire.
Yeah.
However, there is another side to it. You know, other people disagree with this. There's those who don't believe that the famine was an act of genocide, you know, because the Brits, they didn't cause the potatoes to rot, true. And they tried to do a few things to help. They certainly didn't do a good job, and they could have done more, but they weren't actively trying to murder people. Okay. And most people who write about Irish history reject the genocide claim, and thus that's why it's never really referred to as genocide.
Yeah. The potato genocide would sound very different.
It would, like, cause too many, like, fun, like, goofy puns and things, and they'd be like, no, this is serious, and people would be like, did they put all the potatoes in the fryer?
Yeah.
Like, horrible. To a lot of people, they see that it wasn't an act of genocide, but to the Irish, through knowing that the British could have done so much more and prevented so much and stopped freaking exporting, could have saved thousands, hundreds, millions of lives, you know, who knows how many, but they could have just completely rewritten history if they had done things differently and they had cared a little bit more. And it's, you know, it's something that is very specific to Irish, you know, pride of like, you know, just like a world war, everyone who was alive during that time knew someone who was affected, just like this time period, you know, with COVID, everyone, before you know it, is going to know someone that was affected. With this, it was like, yeah, we saw all of our family members die. Like, this was not something that, you know, the British could have. You know, they could have done something differently. They were trying to kill us.
Yeah.
So I guess at the end, it was just kind of this philosophical debate of, you know, if you watch someone bleeding out on the street and you don't call 911, did you murder that person? That's.
Yeah. And there's, and also I can make like a more current comparison. There's a lot of issues with indigenous peoples in the Amazon. And them being exposed to COVID through, like, illegal loggers entering their area. Yep. And a lot of people are blaming, what's his name, Bolsonaro, the president, for, you know, disassembling environmentalist groups and, like, preventing protections for these people. And they are saying it is, like, a form of genocide by not protecting them. You know?
Yeah, or so like, when they were clearing land to make more grazing areas through slash and burn. And then, oh, no, it got out of hand, and now the whole Amazon's on fire and indigenous were dying.
Yeah.
Like, So that is the Irish potato famine.
The potato famine. Wow. I did think it was that, like, the potato was such a staple in their diet and they didn't have it, so it was like gone, but it was more just like an economic thing and the poor people did rely on it, but they still had other food, but they exported it to England.
They just had no access to any of it.
Yeah, especially, wow.
Like, if you can imagine, like, starving and, like, knowing that your children are home starving and you're, like, forced to, like, load crates into a ship full of, like, seeds and
corn, gallons of butter.
All this other yeah. stuff. Just like, oh, maybe if I roll this 1 gallon down the hill, they won't notice.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's awful.
Yeah. And it was all, like, exploitation from landlords and rent and land.
Yeah.
Everything like that. Like, it all relied on their, all of that. So, and there was also, there's a really good Margaret Atwood novel called Alias Grace that I read a few years ago, and it's about this girl that comes over to Canada from the Irish potato famine, and the only way she gets there is because they're like, well, we'll pay for your passage, but then you have to be a maid here for, like, it was some crazy amount of time. Like,
you have
to live and be a maid, like a servant, an indentured servant for like 10 years.
For a long time. She was
like, great, get me off this island.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we read a book in high school called Angela's Ashes. Did you ever read that?
That's a bleak one.
Isn't that about the potato famine?
Yep.
Am I totally wrong? Okay, no, okay.
I don't remember it super well because I did read it in high school and it was so long ago, but
yeah, yeah.
There's a funny Office episode where they have a book club.
Yeah.
And they talk about Angela's Ashes, and Jim is like trying to like talk about the book, but he didn't read it. And he's like, it was so funny. And they're like,
oh gosh. It wasn't at all.
He's like, yeah, and Angela is the narrator, and he's like, nope, because it's her ashes. So
it's yeah.
not right.
No, you definitely didn't read it. Do you want to hear my potentially offensive joke?
Oh, yeah. Bring it in.
Okay. What's more Irish than potatoes?
What?
Not having potatoes.
Oh.
It's bad. But I've said it to some actually Irish people, and they were like, that's kind of funny. So maybe that's okay.
I mean, it's pretty good. I was thinking it was going to be more clever, but it's pretty Irish.
I think it's pretty good, and it's also, like, it was a long time ago, you know? It's, like, things that are 200 years old might be on the table for joking about, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Especially if it's, like, not, I mean, there's still been issues, obviously, with the North of Ireland and
South of Ireland.
And the UK and all.
But I don't think they're entirely potato.
But I don't think they're not just like, this is still for the potato. And then they, like, I also remember when I was in Ireland with my parents when I was like 18, we were at this like bed and breakfast in this like very small like Irish town, and this like older, like, American, super obnoxious touristy woman was just, like, complaining the whole time because Irish soda bread is kind of an acquired taste. Like, it's not, you know, it's not Sara Lee here.
Yeah.
So yeah. She was, like, complaining about the bread. Also, funnily enough, my mom was complaining about the butter because they do have different butter.
Interesting. Okay.
It's different. It's also an acquired taste. But so this older woman asked the waiter, she's like, I don't like the bread. Can I have an English muffin? And the look on the waiter's face was like, you wanted what?
What?
And I remember being like, Mom, why is that weird? And she was like, you don't ask about English things here. And I was like, okay, I don't know. I'm a dumb 18-year-old, so yeah, looking back, I was like, wow, that's pretty funny.
Yes. Ridiculous.
Well, I sort of explained that into at least one ear hole. Hopefully,
you definitely did. I think both ear holes. And yeah, I have a much better understanding of the potato pan.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, next time I eat a potato, I'll think about if it was liquidier and maybe a foul smelling color.
Hopefully not.
No amount.
I will be wary of that.
That's butter or shredded cheddar cheese or.
I go sour cream.
Bacon bits, whatever you put on there, it won't make it better.
Yeah, no, I don't think you could with the blight.
All right, well, explain that one away.
That was explained away.